From WBUR Boston and NPR, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. Measles are back in the USA, all over the headlines after a decade and more in which growing numbers of American parents have been opting out of vaccinating their children. Anti-vaxxers, crunchy moms and dads, the science says it's safe. Now, states are looking to tighten up vaccination requirements. This hour on Point, the call for mandatory vaccination and the risks that we face when Americans opt out. Joining me first today from Washington is Liz Szabo, a medical reporter for USA Today. She's been following the outbreak of measles and the uproar over vaccination and dropping American vaccination rates. Liz Szabo, thanks very much for being with us. What's the latest number you've seen, Liz, nationally on the number of cases out there?
Well, California has 103. There are at least 110 just this year in 16 states. The California numbers go back to last month, but at least 110 just since January 1st in 16 states.
It was zero, I guess, in the year 2000. Last year, there were 650. What kind of trend line are we on?
Well, people are very worried about it. I've talked to some doctors who are a little more skeptical about vaccines, and they see this as a small outbreak. They're in the minority. A lot of people are worried because we did have 644 cases last year. If we have 100 cases per month, if that bears out, that would be 1,200 cases, which would be a lot. So people are worried.
You're talking with doctors skeptical about vaccines, but the overwhelming message that I've seen coming out in the last week or two is doctors saying vaccines are safe. Go get them.
Absolutely. Absolutely. There really have been a minority of people who've been pretty vocal over the last 10 or 15 years, who've really gotten a lot of press and have written a lot of books and who've influenced a lot of people.
Liz, but I'm looking...
The vast majority of doctors are adamantly pro-vaccine, and the science is certainly very clear that vaccines are safe.
I'm looking at a map of the United States, Liz, that shows, you know, states where there are religious exemptions, states where there are personal belief exemptions, and that's almost all of the United States, the exceptions being the states of Mississippi and West Virginia. What do you see now in terms of pushback on the what has become in many states kind of easy path to exemption?
Right. Now, all states allow kids to have a medical exemption, if they're getting chemotherapy. Every place except Mississippi and West Virginia allow for religious exemptions if someone's a Christian Scientist, and 20 allow exemptions for personal beliefs. And there's a lot of debate about this. We've been tracking vaccine legislation in at least 10 states. Some, like California, some of these bills would make it harder, but some of the bills, like in New York, Colorado, Mississippi, Montana, and West Virginia, would make it easier to opt out of vaccines and easier for unvaccinated kids to go to school.
The concern is that lower and lower percentages of Americans are being vaccinated. I'm looking here at a World Health Organization saying in the year 2013, it was 91% vaccination rate in the United States, lower than Zimbabwe, lower than Bangladesh, lower than Tanzania. 91% can sound high, but it's not high enough. Why not?
Right. Well, the vaccination rates need to be around 94%. The CDC would prefer we'd be up to 95% because that's what you need to prevent outbreaks. There are always going to be a few percentage of kids who don't respond to vaccines, but if the overall vaccination rates are high enough, we can create something called herd immunity, where even unvaccinated kids are protected by this sort of fence of vaccinated people around them. The other worrisome thing is that there are pockets in this country that we've documented and others have documented as well, where the number of unvaccinated kids is enormous. I think my colleagues found 19 schools in the Los Angeles area where the vaccination rates are below 20%. So
that's,
there are pockets. There are pockets where the vaccination rates are incredibly low, and that's where the outbreaks take off.
That's kind of an astounding number. I mean, there's really nothing to stop the outbreak there. Do those pockets tend to be pockets of poverty, pockets of affluence? Can you characterize them?
Yeah, they're both. They're both. After the last huge measles outbreak in 1989 to 1991, Congress authorized the Vaccines for Children program because so many of the measles cases were in very poor kids whose parents couldn't afford vaccines. So now vaccines are free for everyone. There's still kids who are poor in chaotic or abusive situations who aren't getting their vaccines. But the other extreme are very wealthy, very affluent parents who think that their kids just don't need vaccines. They are smart enough to do some research on the internet. The research is often really not accurate. And they think their kids are safe as long as they eat the, you know, organic foods and get breast milk. And a lot of the people who resist vaccines now are affluent, well-educated people.
Of course, in a way, they've been free riding on that very large number of people who do get vaccinated in most communities. We didn't have measles around. I guess that could lead to a kind of sense of don't worry, be happy.
Right, right. I mean, if you're the lone unvaccinated person for personal belief and everyone else is vaccinated, then you actually are pretty safe. But the problem is that birds of a feather flock together and their herds are much more porous than they realized, and which is what we're seeing in California, where there are these 103 measles cases. About a third of them are in Orange County, because people who are like-minded about vaccines tend to live close together, just like people who are like-minded about abortions or guns or anything else might live close together. So these kids who are unvaccinated are often surrounded by other unvaccinated friends.
So now you're reporting, Liz, that people are flooding into pediatricians' offices mm-hmm. in areas where measles are now a real threat. There's a scramble on.
Yeah, I talked to one pediatrician who, at least for a couple hours last week, ran out of measles vaccine. And her next shipment came in. But this is a woman who said most of her patients would get vaccines, but there were a sizable number who had been delaying. And I've talked to parents of kids who waited, instead of vaccinating their kids at age one, who waited until age three or age five, and they're now bringing their kids in to get vaccines.
Liz Sabol, please stand by with USA Today in Washington. It's great to have you here with us right now from Sacramento, California. Dr. Richard Pan, state senator in California, represents Sacramento, and he's a practicing pediatrician. He will be introducing a bill that would clamp down on non-medical exemptions to school vaccination requirements. Richard Pan, Dr. Pan, thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you. Hello.
Why are you introducing this bill now?
Well, I'm introducing this bill because, as we can see with the ever-escalating outbreaks, that we need to get our vaccination rates up so that we can protect everyone in the community. I had previously authored a bill to try to increase immunization rates by requiring that parents, before they can get exempted from enrolling their child into a school without vaccination, that they talk to a licensed healthcare professional about the vaccines. And in fact, this year, which is the first year it's been implemented, we did see a reduction in exemptions. However, we still have the pockets of schools or communities where immunization rates are certainly not high enough to protect the public. And what happened is my office has been getting calls from parents saying that I'm worried and concerned that I can't that if I go to the grocery store or a theme park or the school, that my children could be exposed to measles or other vaccine-preventable illnesses. And more importantly, there are people who cannot be vaccinated, young children under the age of one for measles. You have people who have cancer, who may be on chemotherapy or other diseases that suppress their immune system. They depend on the rest of us to get vaccinated so that they're protected, because they can't get vaccinated themselves.
How would your legislation change the law in California? How would it bring about higher vaccination rates? Would you make vaccination mandatory?
Well, we would abolish the personal belief exemption in California, so that if you wanted to enroll your child in school, you would have to have a medical exemption. We are still discussing whether the necessity and the nature of religious exemption. But the goal of the bill is to get our vaccination rates up high enough so we can protect the public. So we want to be sure that immunization rates are high enough that people don't have to worry about going into public places where other people gather and worry that they would potentially be exposed to a deadly disease.
What's to keep Californians from simply saying, it's a religious exemption I want, not a personal belief exemption, give it to me?
No, it is about trying to get our immunization rates up. And we see that states that don't have a personal belief exemption. In fact, California is in a minority of states that have a personal belief exemption. That states that don't have a personal belief exemption actually have higher immunization rates than those who do. So even states with a religious exemption have a higher rate. And what we want to try to do is get our immunization rates high enough so that the public is protected. This bill is about public safety.
You've got a long way to go in many of your communities. What do the odds look like in the legislature? Is it open to this? Do you feel support among your fellow legislators?
I do feel a tremendous amount of support. As I said, my office is receiving calls from parents who say that this is something we need to do. I shouldn't have to worry about going to public places. I talked to a woman who is pregnant, is about to deliver soon. She has a young child. She says, my newborn, when my newborn is born, is not going to be able to be vaccinated for a whole year. And meanwhile, we have this outbreak going on in California, this outbreak of measles that started last December in Disneyland. And she's worried. And I had many other parents have called and participated in the press conference we had talking about the bill because they are concerned. Why should people have to worry that if they go to public places, they go to the grocery store, they go to a theme park, they go to their to school or daycare? We've had daycare shut down because of measles exposure.
Dr. Richard Pan, please stand by in Sacramento, California. I'm very glad you're here. Liz Szabo with USA Today in Washington. We're talking about the growing rash of measles and calls now to make vaccination mandatory. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We'll be right back. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we're talking this hour about the growing rash of measles in the United States and calls now to make vaccination mandatory, looking at American vulnerability to disease and, in part, the anti-vaxxer movement and some of the consequences of those many Americans who have opted out. Richard Pan in Sacramento, let me ask you about a couple of comments we heard from prominent politicians last week. This was New Jersey Governor Chris Christie saying that you have to pay attention to what parents want here.
All I can say is that we vaccinate ours. And so, you know, that's the best expression I can give you my opinion. You know, it's much more important, I think, what you think as a parent than what you think as a public official. And that's what we do. But I also understand that parents need to have some measure of choice in things as well. So that's the balance that the government has to decide.
Dr. Pan, state senator in California, there's the governor of New Jersey saying it's much more important what you think as a parent than what you think as a public official. Parents need to have a measure of choice. Do you agree with that in this case?
Well, I'm hearing from parents. I'm hearing from parents who say, please get children vaccinated because I don't need to worry. I don't want to have to worry about my children when I go to public places, when I bring my child to school or daycare. That's what parents are telling me. This bill that I'm doing is about protecting the public. And it's about public safety. And we passed many laws that to protect public safety, and this one is to protect the general public. Our goal is to try to raise our immunization rates high enough so that people don't have to worry about being exposed to these diseases. Again, we need to protect the most vulnerable. So again, we have people who cannot get vaccinated, young children, people who have cancer or other diseases where they can't mount an immune response, and they deserve to be protected and to be able to go out in public and not have to worry about catching a deadly disease.
Liz Szabo, in Washington, do you find medical professionals shocked that we now have lower vaccination rates than many third world countries here in the United States, Liz?
Yeah, absolutely. In fact, I just talked to former First Lady Rosalynn Carter. She's been a vaccine advocate for close to 40 years. And she said, you know, these vaccine rates go up and down, and we just have to start from scratch every time. And it's frustrating that it seems... I've heard people say that there's a natural history to vaccination programs, and when vaccine rates go down, people stop forgetting why vaccines are needed, which makes outbreaks come back. And maybe that's the only thing that really changes public opinion.
It's back right now. We've got listeners with questions and with comments. Therese in Des Moines, Iowa. Therese, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Hi, Tom. I'm just kind of reiterating what your guests have talked about. I had a granddaughter that was in chemotherapy for 19 of her first 24 months. And we're one of those families that depended on other folks to do the right thing because she could not get immunizations. And not only measles, but a host of other diseases she would be very susceptible to with the low immunity system because of the chemotherapy. And I feel like it is your community duty. You know, we're all in this together, and it takes a village, and I believe in all of that, and I think that people, it's their responsibility and their duty to their fellow man to get vaccinated. And I think it is true that people have become lax because we're spoiled and we haven't seen an outbreak and we haven't had the plague or anything like that. And so people forget how terribly devastating these diseases can be, you know, to communities.
Therese, I appreciate your call. Communities and to families with granddaughters like yours. I appreciate your call. Richard Pan, please stand by. And Liz Szabo, Steven Salzberg joins us right now from Baltimore, Maryland, professor of biomedical engineering, computer science, biostatistics at Johns Hopkins University. He's director there of the Center for Computational Biology. Steven Salzberg, thank you very much for being with us.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
You look at a map of the United States and the great number of states that have plenty of exemptions available from vaccination. Is that wrong? Should that change? Do you see a movement to change that?
Well, yes, I think that's it's unfortunate that we have so many states with exemptions. I think what's happened over the past 20 or 25 years since the last measles, real measles epidemic, was that people just didn't see these infections in their communities, so they didn't worry about them. And then on the flip side, the anti-vaccine movement since around 1998 has been spreading a lot of stories on the internet, which don't really have any scientific basis, but scare stories about possible harm from vaccines. And I want to emphasize there is no scientific basis for these. Vaccines are very safe. We have decades of evidence for it. But parents have decided, I guess not surprisingly, they go on the internet when their childs are first ready for vaccines and do their own research and discover scary stories and think, well, it sounds like there's some things to be worried about. And on the other hand, they don't see any kids getting sick, so they're not worried about the diseases. So we're seeing this sort of cycle of people refusing vaccines or withholding vaccines from their children through unfounded fears. And then legislatures have given into that and said, well, we'll just make it easy for people to opt out.
Are measles a big deal? If a child gets measles, what's the threat?
Well, measles is a very serious illness. It's not as mild as some people might think it is. In the current outbreak in California, something like a quarter of the people affected have been hospitalized, and that's a very serious outcome of a disease. It's not that you're just home with a couple days in bed with a slight fever. So measles also has a risk of long-term damage to the person who's infected, possible brain damage, and even death at a rate of about 2 or 3 in every 1,000 people infected. So it used to be in this country we would see hundreds or even thousands of people dying per year from measles when we were at a state when there were hundreds of thousands of people getting infected back decades ago. But we've sort of forgotten that, and therefore people don't worry about measles the way they should.
Dr. Salzberg, I wonder what you make of these comments. This is from Republican Senator Rand Paul of Kentucky talking with CNBC last Monday.
I've heard of many tragic cases of walking, talking, normal children who wound up with profound mental disorders after vaccines. I'm not arguing vaccines are a bad idea. I think they're a good thing. But I think the parents should have some input. The state doesn't own your children. Parents own the children.
I don't know who owns children, if anybody, but there's Chris Christie saying parents should have choice, Steven Salzberg, and Rand Paul saying, you know, people walking around 1 minute, and the next thing you know, they're down and in trouble because of vaccination, and the state, he's saying back off.
Well, unfortunately, I think it was very irresponsible of Rand Paul, especially as someone who's has an MD himself, to make a statement like that, which if he were to do any sort of proper research, he would discover there's no scientific evidence for what he stated. So I want people to – this is sort of the problem. There are people with MDs in the anti-vax movement who are making this claim. And what happens is we're very good at observing correlations and assigning causation to those, by which I mean when children come down with an illness, say a and almost like autism. We always look for a proximal cause. What did that, what happened just around that same time? Well, autism is a disease that that children start to show signs of, usually in their between the ages of 1 and 2 or 1 and 3, and that's the very same time at which they're getting a lot of vaccinations. So of course, some parents will remember that the vaccine that their child got took place shortly before they first started noticing signs of autism. That's a correlation. That's now been studied in dozens of studies involving literally millions of children, and there's no causal link between the two.
Liz Szabo, if I may, I'll come to you, Dr. Salzberg. Liz, how widespread do you see this move for mandatory vaccination being? Dr. Pan wants to do it in California. Where else is this pushing forward, Liz?
Yeah, well, it's interesting because states seem to be pretty divided on this. But California, Oregon, Washington are all pushing to make it harder to opt out. Arizona is considering legislation to make school vaccination rates public. But as I mentioned, New York, Colorado, Mississippi, Montana, and West Virginia are all considering bills to make it easier to go to school without vaccines. So it's really hard to say how this will turn out.
The country at kind of a fork in the road here as, boom, we have measles right in front of us. Liz Szabo with USA Today, medical reporter there. Great to have you with us this hour, Liz. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks.
Let's go to Bill in Mount Pulaski, Illinois. Bill, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Well, thanks for taking my call. I had the measles as a young, and I remember it, and it was miserable. It was absolutely miserable. And I just don't understand. I'd like to know what their thoughts are. How did we get to a point in our culture where the media, the politicians, your next-door neighbors are presenting two sides to a one-sided issue? Vaccines and vaccination and inoculation is hundreds of years old. You know, I read a book about smallpox, and they were experimenting with inoculation at the turn of the 18th century. This is not new. We know how it works. And so how anyone can have I just don't understand it. I don't understand how we're having a debate about something that's settled.
We'll pick it straight up, Bill. I appreciate your call. I mean, you know, we invited on a representative of that whole anti-vaxxer movement. She wouldn't come on unless she was on for the whole hour. But we didn't want to give the impression, though, that this is a 50-50 question. It does seem to be fairly well settled. But here was Barbara Lowe Fisher from the National Vaccine Information Center. Advocacy group argues against mandated vaccines. She posted this video on the organization's website responding to the measles outbreak.
The battle lines are clearly drawn. Now Americans have a choice to make. Will we stand up and fight to protect our freedom to make voluntary decisions about which vaccines we buy and use? Or will we permit liability-free drug companies and government health officials to take that freedom from us?
Dr. Richard Pan, this looks like it could be at risk of becoming a big political issue in this country. I don't know how it's going to sort out, but you've certainly got that libertarian note in the comments of some politicians now, and you hear it there in the anti-vaxxer kind of campaigners. Our caller says, how do we get two sides to a one-sided story here? There aren't really two sides here. How do you see it, Dr. Pan?
Well, vaccines are safe. They are effective. We depend on people getting vaccinated in order to protect the general public. So the Supreme Court and the courts have ruled that mandatory vaccination is constitutional because they often say it's unconstitutional, but it's settled. It's been settled in the courts as well. This is really about protecting public safety. We have laws to help protect the public, and vaccination is an essential part of protecting the public. It is interesting that I've seen, you know, many people have different beliefs about vaccination. However, the science and the facts are clear that the diseases they prevent are dangerous ones that we need to protect the public from, we do, in order to protect the public, we do have to expect that when people go to schools or other public places, particularly schools, children should be vaccinated so we don't have outbreaks happening in our communities and in our schools.
Scott in Atlanta, Georgia. What do you think, Scott? You're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I think that it's a difficult thing to pinpoint. the idea of giving a child anywhere from 3 to 12 vaccinations at one time when they have a developing immune system can't help but have an abrupt impact to their immune system. I mean, you're trying to make them immune to these diseases, but the idea that there's no evidence that can link these vaccinations and this impact to the immune system to autism is false.
Who says, Scott? I mean, I know you can find a million things on the web, but here we've got doctor after doctor overwhelmingly in the community saying it's not false. There's not a connection.
Well, I'm part of a community of people who have children with immunological issues, and we all correspond. We don't just read the internet. We correspond and we link things to developments in our children to other things that happen because we're inquisitive and because we're trying to figure out what to do as parents.
So what have you decided to do, Scott, in your case?
In our case, we've decided to space out the immunizations. And you can't do it one at a time or you'll go to the doctor every month, but no more than, say, two at a time to minimize the impact in unknowns on the immune system itself.
So you're doing it, but you're stepping outside the recommended kind of pacing of that to stretch it out over time. Steven Salzberg, how do you respond to Scott's homemade solution there?
Well, a number of parents have adopted these alternative schedules, and there's a couple quick things I could say. One is that by delaying vaccines, you're exposing your child to risk for a longer period of time, a risk of infection that you don't need to expose that child to, and I think that's kind of unfortunate. On the scientific side, the vaccine schedule has been tested now, and it's constantly reevaluated and has been modified over the years for safety. And there's no evidence that the vaccine schedule, as it's recommended by the American Academy of Pediatrics, causes any harm to children. In fact, it's very safe, and the vaccines over the years have been reformulated so the number of antigens, the number of things your immune system responds to, is actually far lower today than it was 20 years ago when there were fewer vaccines.
Dr. Penn, you're a pediatrician. Do you have parents like our caller from Atlanta who are full of doubt here in spite of all the reassurances, and why do you think that is?
Well, I think as was pointed out earlier in the show that vaccines have been a victim of their own success. People don't see these diseases. They haven't seen these diseases before. They're coming back, unfortunately. And so, and what happens is you go and you hear some of the people in the media and some of the things on the internet. They cause parents to be frightened and worry about the vaccines in comparison to the disease. But I think we also need to point out some interesting logical inconsistencies that often hear in the anti-vaccine debate. So we just heard from a gentleman who's concerned about the number of antigens in the vaccines, and I would probably argue that when you bring your child outside, they're going to be exposed to a lot of different antigens, more so than they would in any of the visits for the vaccine series. However, we also hear from the anti-vaccine folks that getting the disease naturally is more effective than getting the vaccine itself because it stimulates the immune system more. But yet stimulating the immune system is what makes them worry about the vaccine because they think they're going to overwhelm their child's immune system. So I think, you know, we do need to try to share accurate information, but it is also important we protect the public, and it is important for doctors and other healthcare professionals to talk to their patients.
Dr. Pan, Richard Pan, looking to tighten up requirements for vaccination in California. Please stand by there in Sacramento. Steven Salzberg in Baltimore. We're looking at the growing rash of measles and calls to make vaccination mandatory. What do you think? This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point, and we are talking this hour about the growing rash of measles in the United States and calls now to make vaccination mandatory. Steven Salzberg, Richard Pan, lots of response online. April says, where's the line between a parent's choice and the greater good of society? Tommy Karen says, there's no right not to vaccinate. There's only a social responsibility to vaccinate. She goes that way. But Bob says, if vaccinations don't cause autism, it behooves the medical community to find out and tell us what does. And Amy says if we're going to mandate vaccines, then the drug companies who create them need to be held responsible when there is the inevitable complication. Stephen Salzberg, speak to that. There's not liability here. And yet, you know, your parents say, I feel naked then, and I see a lot of autism going on. You hear Bob saying, you better tell us what causes this autism if it's not vaccinations, because we've seen those numbers very high and we're worried.
Well, a lot of questions there, but on the question of what causes autism, there are literally thousands of scientists studying this. I work closely with some of them. I've done a little work on it myself. We know there's a significant genetic component, which of course is not an environmental one. There is an active search on for any kind of environmental component that is something in the environment, in your diet, in the mother's environment that might cause autism, and yet no links have been found. That doesn't mean there isn't an environmental cause, but we simply haven't found it. But there are thousands of scientists working on this.
We've got Dr. Philip Landrigan at Mount Sinai reported over the weekend saying that it may be related to endocrine disrupting chemicals in consumer products, not vaccines. Look there, he told Nick Kristof with The Times.
Well, people are looking at that as well, but there more work needs to be done before there's any kind of authoritative statement about that. But vaccines have been looked at more than probably any other environmental cause, and the science is in on this. There's really no point in looking at them anymore because we've spent so much time and so much effort already looking, and that's turned out to be a false lead. So autism advocates have pointed out in recent years that we shouldn't be spending our precious resources looking at a now failed hypothesis. So there's nothing that causes autism. There's no reason to worry about that.
Dr. Richard Penn, how do you think we get a turnaround in public thinking on this? I mean, you want to close down the personal exemption path in California, where it's been used a lot. Of course, I suppose people could just go to a religious exemption claim in that case if they're still worried about it. Dr. Penn.
Well, what we're hearing is that parents are concerned about their children, parents are calling and saying they want people to get vaccinated so that they don't have to worry about their own, kids who can't get vaccinated. I mean, when we look at the measles outbreak in California, there's so far to date, we know of 103 cases. 8 of them are children under a year who cannot be vaccinated. You know, we've heard from the parent who called in earlier. She has a granddaughter who was under treatment for chemotherapy. I mean, there's other parents, similar situations. We need to protect them. And the way we can protect them is by getting vaccinated so that when an outbreak, when someone gets exposed, the virus has no place to go. It can't go from an unvaccinated person to another unvaccinated person. And that's essentially what's happened in this last outbreak. As you can see, I believe you had a show last year, approximately a year ago, when everyone was talking about how many measles cases there were the previous year. Well, the very year of your show, last year, 2014, was even higher. We had 644 cases in the country. And we can't just keep escalating this every year. People are going to get harmed if we don't stop the spread of measles.
When the measles have nowhere to go, that's called herd immunity, because people are vaccinated. When they have plenty of places to go, you get outbreaks. Kirsten in Charlotte, North Carolina. Kirsten, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for taking my call. Mm-hmm. I just wanted to say that, you know, we require kids to sit in car seats, and the police can pull me over and give me a ticket if I don't put my kid in a car seat, and that's only my child's life at stake if I don't do it. It's personal responsibility as a parent, and the idea that people would be allowed to attend public institutions like school without getting vaccinations, where it threatens all of us, I find that socially irresponsible.
Kirsten, I appreciate your call. Dr. Penn, is this like car seats or restrictions on selling alcohol to minors? I mean, we heard Rand Paul saying, you know, stay out of governing a child's life, but there are ways in which we get involved with what children can and cannot do. The state gets involved with it already, Dr. Penn.
That's correct. The state does get involved because we think it is important that we protect children. I think there was a comment made before that we don't own children. Children have their own rights. But actually, in the case of immunizations, vaccinations, it's even greater because
that decision, whether to vaccinate or not, a child, doesn't just impact that child. It impacts other children. It impacts other people in the community. And so when we want to protect the public health and prevent people from being exposed to vaccine preventable illness, diseases like measles, whooping cough, and others, we count on having enough people vaccinated so these diseases can't spread. So that decision whether to vaccinate or not is not just a personal one. It becomes a one that affects public safety and public health.
Stephen Salzberg, describe how herd immunity works to us here. We got about 91%, we're told, vaccination rate in this country now, though we've heard in this hour in some pockets it can be as low as 20%, which is really pretty naked. But the difference between 91 and 95 or 94% vaccination can be the difference between outbreaks and the absence of outbreaks. Well, why does it need to be so high to keep it contained, Dr. Salzberg?
Well, the percentage you need depends on how infectious the agent is. And measles is one of the most infectious diseases we know. An average measles case infects something like 15 to 20 other people. So the reason you need that high percentage is that when you have a few people, even a small number of people unvaccinated, then when one person is sick, they will infect they'll infect one of those other unvaccinated people who in turn will infect another and another, and you basically can't stop it from jumping around. So measles, for example, can linger in a room for hours after the person has left. So it depends on the environment and how infectious the agent is, but for something so infectious as measles, you really want to get everybody vaccinated as a way of keeping it from jumping into another community.
Why do you think the move against this has found such a buy-in from Americans, Stephen Salzberg? I mean, I'm looking, a lot of this goes back to this research that was done in the UK back all the way back in the late 90s, discredited up and down. There was a piece in The Lancet, but then the editor of The Lancet came out and called this the most appalling catalog and litany of some of the most terrible behavior in any research that they'd ever seen. And yet this still has legs in the popular, zone of fear, imagination. Why?
Well, it's been frustrating to scientists because on the scientific side, that research you're describing was discredited long ago, really back in 2001 and 2002. Pretty strong evidence came out even then that discredited that research, which was claiming a link between vaccines and autism. But unfortunately, people go on the internet and do their own research, or then they listen to celebrities or popular figures who have picked up this message. These are not scientists. These are people like actress Jenny McCarthy or politician or former politician RFK Jr. or actually political family.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And they are continuing to sort of trumpet the message with very loud megaphones that there's harm from vaccines. And people listen. And I would just try to urge people to think for a second. Now, this is a complicated topic. Immunology is very complicated. Vaccines are very complicated. Why should you be taking serious medical advice from someone who has no qualifications to do it and ignoring the advice of people who spend their lives really dedicated to trying to cure people of disease and to prevent disease? And the scientists are saying, look, these vaccines are a tremendous public good. We wish you would listen. We're trying to help you. And unfortunately, we have popular people who are on TV a lot and in the media a lot who are saying the opposite. And for reasons that are frustrating to scientists, those people are believed by others.
Catherine in Boston. Catherine, thank you for calling. You're on the air.
Thank you, Tom. Many of us grew up in an age before the vaccine, when we had measles and got through it. Would we even be having this conversation if it were polio or smallpox?
If it were something really deadly in a more immediate way, Richard Pan, what do you think? Measles, despite the fact that it can mean hearing loss and brain damage and all the rest, people kind of put it in that lesser category of disease. Would we be having this if it were more deadly, this conversation?
Well, we would be not having this conversation, I think, if it was as widespread as it was before there were vaccinations. And, I think that scientists and physicians have been frustrated about many of the much of the misinformation that's been spread. It's unfortunate that some people are so bought into this that they engage in dangerous behavior, such as holding measles parties, and there were public health authorities trying to advise people don't hold measles party.
What is a measles party, Dr. Penn?
A measles party is that when the child gets infected with the measles, they tell other parents, hey, bring your kids over so they can be exposed, because I don't think measles is a deadly or serious disease. People have gotten so bought into the idea that catching the disease naturally is better than vaccination that they're actually not only endangering other children and helping spread the disease farther. And so we need to be sure people hear about the good science and the evidence about disease like measles. Measles can cause death and brain damage. Fortunately, because of vaccinations, most people never had to see that happen to someone.
What about the risk of the outbreak that we're in the midst of right now, Stephen Salzberg? We've heard the most about California, though now we've got a daycare center outside Chicago, where last week there were a couple of cases there. Now I'm reading that there are 5 cases there. We had 644 cases nationally last year. Here we are. It's early February. We've got 100-plus already. What's the risk, given the vaccination rates that we do have in this country now, Stephen?
Well, clearly the risk is rising. The problem is that measles is still endemic in other parts of the world, and these days we're a very interconnected society. People fly into the U.S. by the millions every day, and in some of those areas. And so the cases that we're seeing are cases that they come to the U.S., one person gets on a plane, comes to the U.S., infects someone else, and then the problem is with the lowering of vaccination rates, that single case turns into a few and then a few dozen, and now we have over 100 out in California. So the risk is the communities where vaccination rates are lower could see very significant outbreaks, as we're seeing right now, and as we saw one such case outbreak last year in Ohio.
Where does your hope lie here, in law or in changed attitudes? Do we need to change that map that shows how many states make it relatively easy to opt out, or is it a public education campaign?
Well, I think we need to do both. I'm pleased that parents are finally waking up and pushing back a bit, and I'm hoping these measles exemptions policies, which have been put in place in most states, will just go away. We've had mandatory vaccination for public schools for decades, and it was working just fine. And let me just mention that when I say mandatory vaccination, the government's not going to come to your house and vaccinate your kid. This is if you want to participate in society, and in particular if your kids are going to school, which is a public enterprise, then you have to agree that you're not going to put other kids at risk as a part of participating in society. So I'm hoping that legislators will realize they were a little bit too laissez-faire about allowing exemptions for almost any reason, and should go back to having exemptions only for medically relevant causes.
Jeff in Detroit. Jeff, you're on the air. Thanks for calling.
Yeah, hi, Tom. I just wanted to give a voice. I have a 7, a 4, and a 2-year-old, all vaccinated. When my 2-year-old was 18 months, we had the MMR vaccine. I had a grand mal seizure and stopped breathing for 30 seconds, so it was a pretty serious reaction. Thankfully, he's okay, but, of course, that month afterwards, it was pretty frightening, for our family. And it was definitely a big change in my mind in terms of the vaccination's totally safe claim. There are children that, have injuries each year due to these things. I mean, they're not a lot, but there are some. So,
Jeff, our time is short, but, of course, there are many different kinds of risks here. Dr. Pan, what about the grand mal seizure after the MMR vaccination? How common? How rare?
Well, there's nothing that's 100% effective or that have no side effects. And certainly the number of side effects in measles vaccines is many orders of magnitude less than the disease itself. There are cases where children have developed fever after receiving vaccination where they could have a febrile seizure, which certainly is very frightening. There is no lasting injury as a result of that, but that's why we carefully monitor vaccines and follow up to be sure that they're safe. I think that, it's important that we try to protect the public and prevent lasting harm, such as brain swelling and death that can happen from measles or from other, there's other damage that can happen from vaccine-preventable illness.
If we talked with you a year from now, Dr. Penn, do you think you're going to have these tightened standards requirements in California?
I certainly hope so, because we need to protect the public from these diseases.
Dr. Richard Pan, state senator representing Sacramento, California, and a pediatrician. Thank you very much for being with us this hour, Dr. Pan.
Thank you.
And Stephen Salzberg at Johns Hopkins University, professor of biomedical engineering, computer science, and biostatistics there. Stephen Salzberg, thank you so much for your insights today.
Thanks, Tom.
Listeners, you can continue this conversation and get the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. Follow us on Twitter and Facebook at On Point Radio. Thanks for joining us today. Good luck. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.